Let me ask you a question. Are you prepared as individual Christians and as a church to provide material and financial support for the needs of widows among us? As we saw last week, this fifth chapter of 1 Timothy makes it unquestionably clear that although relatives have the primary responsibility for widows in their own families, believing widows who are truly alone and destitute are the responsibility of the local church. And therefore, I ask you again, are you prepared as individual Christians and as a church to provide material and financial support for the needs of widows among us? You might be relieved to know that, to the best of my knowledge at this moment in time, there are no widows who are members of this church who fit that description. But as we all know, things can change very, very quickly, can't they? And we need to be prepared for that, if and when it does change. Furthermore, as I mentioned last week, I believe that the application of the church's care and material support for widows should be much wider and broader today than it was in the first century, because modern American culture has produced a category of women virtually unknown in the early church, namely Christian women and children who've been abandoned by their spouses and left without family and financial support. Godly Christian single mothers are a new class of widows in the contemporary church. And the Church of Jesus Christ needs to come alongside these needy members and assist them in their time of need. So the Christian church is not only responsible for the material support of godly widows, but she is also responsible for supporting godly mothers with children who have been deserted and abandoned. And it's sad to say, but true, that many churches today don't have this biblical perspective and don't undertake this biblical responsibility, which has its foundational teaching right here in Paul's first epistle to Timothy in chapter 5. However, if the church would but look to the Scriptures to determine what her obligations are to members who are widows, then the matter should be very obvious and very, very clear. And this is what Paul is doing here in chapter 5 of 1 Timothy. Under the general principle of the entire epistle contained in chapter 3, verse 15, earlier read, which says, knowing how Christians ought to behave and conduct themselves in the house of God. So Paul is explaining the important subject of Christian conduct towards widow members of the church. And he does so by dividing them into two distinct groups related to age. You notice older and younger widows in the church, which is the theme of today's text passage. And there are two main points related to this subject. They're printed in your bulletin, so please follow along as I read them both there on the right-hand side. First, in verses 9 and 10, we have the character of older widows for whom the church must provide material support. And then second, in verses 11 to 15, we have the dangers of the church providing material support to younger widows. Again, the first point in verses 9 and 10 is this on your outline: the character of older widows for whom the church must provide material support. Look at verse 9 again in our text. Paul says, Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. Well, here in verses 9 and 10, Paul begins to explain what the qualifications are that a widow must have, listen, in order to be eligible to receive material support from the church. And we'll see in these verses that it has mostly to do with character. Character. But first, Paul begins with age. He says, notice in verse 9, do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number. The phrase "into the number" refers to some kind of list of qualified widows that the early churches maintained, containing the names of all widows in a particular church who were qualified and who were eligible to receive material support from the church. But as we saw last time in verse 5, this wasn't just for any 60-year-old woman. Verse 5 says that a widow had to be a godly woman. She had to trust in God, which is to be a Christian believer, particularly in the matter of God providing for her needs as a widow. And she also had to be a woman who constantly communed with God by continuing in supplications and prayers night and day. So she not only had to be qualified by age, but also by spirituality. She not only had to be 60, but she also had to be spiritual. 60 was the recognized age in the first century when one became an old man or an old woman. But being a man who just turned 62, I can assure you that 60 is no longer considered old. In fact, it's something like middle age, and old doesn't come for a long time till you're at least 90 or so. Now, some have objected to 60 as being too restrictive or limiting to widows in need who may be younger. But of course, this would not prohibit the church from giving occasionally to younger widows in the church who were in need, which undoubtedly the early church and churches subsequent to that have done. However, those on this list, which is what we're talking about, the widows 60 years old taken into the number, are those who were qualified and eligible to be regularly supported by the church. And next, at the end of verse 9, Paul adds that in addition to being at least 60 years old, a widow must also be, notice, the wife of one man, which means that she had been a one-man woman, faithful and devoted to the husband to whom she had been married. Of course, it can't mean, and it doesn't mean, that she may never have been remarried due to the death of her first husband, or to the unlawful divorce or desertion of her first husband, where she was an innocent party. In fact, Paul in verse 14 encourages, notice, the younger widows to remarry. So it would be unjust to exclude them after they had remarried from the church's eligible widow list. Huh? So the expression, the wife of one man, simply means that while married, she had been faithful to her one husband. Next, in verse 10, Paul states a general principle, which is that for a widow to be qualified for material support from the church, She must be, notice, well reported for good works. Well reported for good works. In other words, Paul says she must have a reputation for good works or noble deeds. These attest and bear witness to the kind of woman that she is. And then, in the rest of verse 10, notice, Paul gives five examples of good works that characterize older widows for whom the church must provide material support, beginning with, if she has brought up children. Notice, if she has brought up children. Now, the Greek word here means to be a child rearer and to fulfill the responsibilities of a mother raising children. Now, Paul isn't suggesting by this that the only way a woman can be qualified to be a widow, eligible for church support, is if she has had her own biological children, and that just isn't the case. She may have had adopted children, or she may have reared orphans, caring for them physically and spiritually. And besides this, this is a list of exemplary kinds or types of good works, all of which do not have to be true of every widow. The second example of a widow's good work in verse 10 is hospitality. Notice, if she has lodged strangers. Now, as you must know, in first century Middle East culture, there were no motels or hotels, and inns were notoriously dirty and dangerous places. Therefore, traveling Christians, especially apostles, pastors, and evangelists, depended on the hospitality of believers. And this, Paul says, was one of the identifying marks of a widow for whom the church should now provide material support. She was one who had lodged strangers and was hospitable. Lodging strangers was a grace beautifully demonstrated in the Old Testament by the widow of Zarephath, who sustained Elijah, you remember, in 1 Kings chapter 17, and by the Shunammite woman who lodged Elisha in 2 Kings chapter 4. And in the New Testament, Lydia was a model, a virtual model of hospitality, as was Phoebe in Romans 16, whom Paul commended as a servant and helper of many and of myself as well, he said. The third example of a widow's good works in verse 10 is foot washing. Notice, if she has washed the saints' feet. Of course, this was part of the ancient first century culture. Footwear wasn't what it is today, and roads weren't either. They were dusty and muddy, so guests entering a home had their feet washed by the owners, which demonstrated humility and a servant spirit. And they probably wanted to keep their house clean too. And this kind of servile task was a characteristic good work of a widow whom the church was to materially and financially support. The fourth example of a widow's good works in verse 10 is, notice, if she has relieved the afflicted. The afflicted is phlebo, which means oppressed or under pressure. So the idea here is that the qualified widow for church support has been characterized in the past by her efforts to relieve and to help people under various kinds of pressure, whether physical, mental, or emotional. In fact, the same word translated relieved, you might notice, is also in verse 16, where it refers to monetary or financial relief. The early Christians were afflicted and oppressed in many ways, And the qualified widow for whom the church was now to materially and financially support was characterized as having relieved the afflicted. Well, the fifth and final example of a widow's good works in verse 10 is, notice, if she has diligently followed every good work. For this widow to diligently follow every good work means to wholeheartedly and enthusiastically devote herself to the pursuit of doing good. Now, these five examples comprise the kinds of characteristics that must be present in the life of any widow being considered as one for whom the church will provide material support. Summarizing these characteristics, George Knight wrote this very insightfully. Listen, he said, the qualifications taken together depict one who has clearly passed the time one usually remarries and past an age where she is likely to be able to care for herself. She is known for marital and sexual fidelity and purity, for good works, caring for children and for those in need of hospitality, and for those in special need, and finally, who devotes herself to not only these, but to every kind of good work that God requires of His people, end quote. So that's a summary, a very quick, fast overview of the character of older widows for whom the church must provide material support. Next, in verses 11 and following, Paul shifts our attention from older women to younger widows. Did I say older women? From older widows to younger widows, which leads to the second point on the outline, which is this, notice, the dangers of providing material support to younger widows. Look at verse 11 in our text. Paul says, but refuse the younger widows, for when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they have cast off their first faith. And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. For some have already turned aside after Satan. Now, in these verses, Paul informs Timothy that providing material support for younger widows can be perilous and it can be dangerous. Therefore, Paul commands Timothy to refuse the younger widows, which means to not consider them as candidates. In other words, don't put them on the list, is what he's saying. Now, that doesn't mean that the church won't provide anything for younger widows, as I mentioned earlier. There may be situations and circumstances that would warrant helping them in various and sundry ways. But what's in view here, listen, is the regular, ongoing material and financial support of those who are really widows, what the King James Version calls widows indeed. And that's a group that's a minimum of 60 years old. And Paul gives Timothy and us at least a little light on the subject of why younger widows should be refused this status as real widows. And he begins first in verse 11 with the assertion that a younger widow should seriously consider remarriage in her future. Paul says, referring to the younger widows, that when they have begun to grow wanton against Christ, which seems to refer to an initial consent they made not to marry again, having only Christ to be their spouse, But then later, their desire to marry returned and was rekindled, which, of course, is a perfectly normal and natural desire, especially if they were too young to remain single in the first place. But here's the rub. If a younger widow has been accepted and received by the church as someone to materially and financially support, and if all her basic needs for clothing, food, and shelter are being provided to her, then she might not feel the need for marriage that she otherwise would and should. And that's what Paul's saying. So by way of application, the church can assist younger widows, and it should, but it must be careful not to become their surrogate or substitute husband. The church can assist younger widows, but must be careful not to become their surrogate or substitute husband. On the contrary, the will of God for younger widows is in most cases to find another husband. Despite what our anti-Christian, anti-family culture says, God's will is generally for a woman to be united with a man in marriage, not to be single or remain widowed, especially if widowed at a very young age. Marriage is God's gift to humankind. It is a beautiful thing. It's the desired state for most people, although some are equipped by God to be celibate. And marriage also substantially prevents sin and temptation from causing shame and reproach. So in verse 14, look at it with me. Paul wrote this, "Therefore, I desire that the younger women, younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully." On the basis of his apostolic authority, Paul says here that remarriage for younger widows is the will of God for them. I desire that the younger widows marry. And therefore, the church can assist younger widows, but must be careful not to become their surrogate or substitute husband. The desirable will of God for younger widows is in most cases to find another husband and to remarry. Another reason why Paul commands Timothy to refuse younger widows the status of real widows has to do with the fact that doing so, listen, may adversely affect and impact their spiritual lives. In verses 12 and 13, Paul lists numerous liabilities and dangers that may result when the church assumes and takes over younger widows' material and financial provisions. That can affect a young widow's spiritual life and vitality, sometimes quite radically. And Paul uses some strong, severe words and expressions here that can't help but sober every Christian reader. Look at them beginning in verse 12 again. "Having condemnation because they have cast off," which means to renounce or abandon, "their first faith." Well, that certainly doesn't sound good, does it? And yet that, Paul says, is a danger when the church provides material support to younger widows. But the danger doesn't end there, because verse 13 goes on to say, notice, "And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house." So as opposed to being industrious keepers at home, they become idle and wanderers to other people's homes. And that situation could deteriorate into something worse, which is mentioned at the end of verse 13. Referring to these young widows, the end of verse 13 says, notice, and they are not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Now, gossips is phlaueros in the Greek, meaning overflowing. In this context, overflowing with words about many things they should not be talking about. Busybodies is from a Greek word that refers to someone who moves around and describes a person who is always moving from place to place to place, sticking their nose into other people's business where it does not belong. And what verse 15 says about some young widows is simply shocking. Did you notice? It says, for some have already turned aside after Satan. What's involved in this turning aside after Satan isn't stated or defined, but its severity and grievousness is self-evident from the characterization. And it gives great urgency to Paul's warning. And keep in mind who it is here, about whom are all these sobering words and expressions are being made. Don't lose sight of this. It's none other than these younger widows that Paul was aware of in a Christian church who had been materially and financially supported by it at too early of an age. They were taken into the number too soon, which had devastating results. These young widows experienced many spiritual dangers. Their faith lost its strength and vitality. It loosened from its original mooring. And these young widows had too much time on their hands, and they wandered about and turned aside in many wrong and dangerous directions. And therefore, the church, receiving these younger widows rather than refusing them, adversely impacted their spiritual lives. Now, here are several applications we can make from this. The first one is this. Younger widows are susceptible to some temptations and sins that older widows are not as prone to. Again, younger widows are susceptible to some temptations and sins that older widows are not as prone to. Generally, with age, I think as probably all of us here know, with age comes a seasoning and a strengthening of spiritual life and maturity, or at least it should be so, huh? Older saints should generally be stronger and more resilient to temptation and sin than younger ones. And Paul alludes to this here by pointing out some of the peculiar dangers and liabilities that younger widows face and may succumb to. And although he doesn't elaborate on the specific reasons why this is so, yet he does give us a general principle, namely, that younger widows are susceptible to some temptations and sins that older widows are not as prone to. Another application is this. Widows under 60, particularly much younger widows, should actively seek remarriage rather than becoming dependent on the church for material support. Again, widows under 60, particularly much younger widows, should actively seek remarriage rather than become dependent on the church for material support. And that not only makes good financial sense, because churches are generally poor, at least the ones I know, and I know quite a few churches, Most of them don't operate like big banks, you know, with lots of money. They're generally poor. But it's also sensible from the perspective of human nature, as designed by God, who created marriage to be the optimal human relationship and the preferable human condition. One final application is this. Paul's desire for the younger widows to remarry was designed to safeguard the church from reproach from the world. Again, Paul's desire for the younger widows to remarry was designed to safeguard the church from reproach from the world. And therefore, after Paul warned Timothy and us of the dangers of a church providing material support to younger widows, which could adversely affect their spiritual lives and vitality, he explains the purpose and reason for his warning at the end of verse 14. Did you notice? Namely, to give no opportunity to the adversary or to the adversarial world to speak about the church reproachfully. Paul was concerned that the conduct and behavior of the churches would honor the Lord and not bring reproach upon his name. And therefore, how the church handled the matter of supporting widows, older ones and younger ones, was of great interest to Paul, as it should be to each and every one of us as well. Now, Paul concludes this section on the subject of widows in verse 16 by repeating the truth that he had previously taught in verse 4 and 8, which is that relatives, particularly children and grandchildren, have the primary responsibility for the support of widows within their own family. However, here in verse 16, notice Paul emphasizes the responsibility of the woman as well as the man in widow's care and provision. Verse 16 says this, "If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve or give aid to them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it may relieve those who are really widows." So the responsibility for widows in a family first falls to the children and grandchildren, but also includes other male and female relatives within the family as well. And it is only when no such individuals are available or capable to undertake the task of providing for a widow's material support that this task should fall to the local church. Commenting on this, John MacArthur wrote, and I'll conclude with it, he said, "When families take care of their needy widows, the church is not burdened. It is then free to assist those who are widows indeed. Helping widows brings the promise of blessing from God." Deuteronomy 14:29 says, "The stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates may come and eat and be satisfied, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do." And he continues, "On the other hand, failing to do so brings judgment, because Deuteronomy 27:19 says, 'Cursed is the one who distorts the justice due the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow.'" God's special love and care for widows must be reflected in the actions of his church. And all God's people said, Amen. Let's pray together. And Father, this is a sobering responsibility that belongs to us as individuals, in families, as children or grandchildren of those who are truly widows. help us to fulfill our responsibilities to them, not only as children and grandchildren, but also as men and women, male and female relatives within the family. And then last but not least, and especially applicable to us, is that if none are available, if there is no support materially or financially, and if there are no people within the family of a widow who will do it or are willing to do it, then that responsibility falls to the church. And may we not fail in our responsibility to do it gracefully and faithfully. And may all that we do never bring reproach to the name of Jesus Christ. We ask in His name. Amen.